case, which is Direknich versus Villa Varejao.
Thank you.
I'm all set. Thank you.
I'm good, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Darren Spielman. I represent Direknich, and with me today at counsel's table is my partner, Robert Kane. Your Honors, Villa Varejao did not use the term casas bahia as a mark in the U.S. for advertising services, and there was no substantial effects of any claimed use with any U.S. end users. The lower court erred in finding that Villa Varejao had common law rights for advertising services because they were not sufficiently separate from the subject, and they were merely incidental to the sale of those goods. The court also erred in relying on testimony from an inadmissible document compilation. The district court committed legal error, and as a result, this court should issue a reversal.
Right, to the extent it found facts, after a trial, you'll have to establish not only that it was error, but that it was clearly erroneous. To the extent he made a mistake of law, of course, that's a different thing.
Sure, and as the court as the court made clear, the error here, or as we make clear in our brief, the error was that any testimony relied upon from a purely inadmissible document can't be used to ultimately make the findings that were here. There's a review of the legal error here, not just the issue of whether or not there was a finding of fact. The court went out of its way to try to deal with that issue and raised what was
clear. Well, to the extent the witness had personal and independent knowledge of what was contained in a written document, the fact that the document was struck as hearsay would not yield the conclusion that the independent testimony based on personal recollection would be struck as well. So you have to establish that the witness was not able to testify from personal independent recollection about the matter. It's not enough to simply say the document didn't come in as hearsay.
Agreed. And in this case, that the scenario you just laid out was present, that the witness did not have independent recollection. Instead, Mr. Bowler, when questioning the witness, was explicitly asked by the court, do you want to admit this? And his answer was, no, I'd like to authenticate the document. And then read through tab after tab and had the witness identify specific numbers. There was no indication in the record that there was a belief or an understanding that, oh, as a result, this was my independent recollection of sales numbers or traffic, web traffic numbers or anything. Instead, it was directly...
Didn't he actually testify that, quote, outside the spreadsheet, that he was familiar, because it was part of his job as marketing director, that he was familiar with the existence of the U.S. traffic to the Casas Bahia website, and testify that it was over 4 million? He didn't give the precise number in that, but didn't he testify that he had personal knowledge outside the spreadsheet?
Yes, based upon looking at the spreadsheet. So while the witness was certainly someone who could potentially have that information available, in this situation, the court explicitly relied on those numbers themselves, and the court relied upon the testimony that was elicited from that. You had a question, Judge Marcus?
No.
Okay. So when faced with putting that in its own little side pocket, the larger concern is even assuming that there was potentially some admissible evidence or testimony about some use, it comes back to the heart of, is there use? Is there use of a trademark from a foreign website, from a foreign entity in the U.S., a common law trademark in the U.S., when you're talking about advertising services? So this is not simply the sale of a good, because there was...
What test do we use to determine whether or not a party has proved prior use of a mark sufficient to establish ownership?
So the first level is looking at whether or not there's an advertising service. So under, even looking at how...
Because you argue in your brief that we should follow the test that's set forth by the Federal Circuit in the In Re advertising case. Why shouldn't we use the test, our own test, our 11th Circuit test that's established in Crystal Entertainment and Filmworks versus Jurado? There are two separate tests. Why are we using another circuit's test? Why don't we use our own test?
Because when you're looking at the advertising services concept, it's a very narrow, specific issue. And then combine that with the substantial effects test, because you're dealing with a foreign entity trying to claim U.S. rights.
We can't use our own test to reach that determination, to reach that issue?
We think that the In Re advertising is more instructive and more on point with dealing with a common law advertising services claim. Because in this situation, there's a claim that there was use by merely having three different types of use, they claim. They're relying on three different types of use. One was the preferred product placement, another is the Google banner displays, lastly is the marketplace sellers.
You think the Federal Circuit test is a little more friendly than the 11th Circuit test?
I think that the Federal Circuit in Re advertising is more appropriate for this type of fact scenario. The question before the court was always about use. It was never about anything other than there was no use. And without use, the foreign entity can't try to reclaim or claim any rights from the U.S. ownership of this domain. It's about whether or not that foreign entity can step in and declare and prove use and substantial effects of such use.
Well, there was testimony that some individual companies purchased advertising services from Via Varejo, right? They used the Google, but they also had some testimony that some individual companies purchased their advertising services, right?
That assumes that you're deciding that there was an actual advertising service purchase, which we don't believe is the case.
Okay, let me rephrase my question. There is testimony that companies paid Via Varejo to run their banner ad on their platform, right?
To put a preferred product placement. Again,
I'm not talking, I know the preferred product placement, but the banner ads came in two forms. There was the Google banner ads, but there were also individual companies that they specifically contracted with individually, right?
So there are three scenarios, and definitions might really help us here and be instructive. And even if the court is so inclined, on tab 118 is maybe what you're talking about, but I think if you want to look and talk about it, we can. The high product placement versions are when you look at any major website and it's got beautiful looking displays saying, oh, here's this product. That's not an advertisement, even if that company paid for preferred placement. Because just like if you walked into Publix and you saw an end cap and they're paying extra for there, or walking down the cereal aisle and you saw Cheerios right at your eye level, doesn't make it an ad.
I'm not asking about the preferred product placement.
Sure.
I'm talking about the banner ads.
The banner ads, the only banner ads that were put at issue were done through Google. And Google is completely and totally separate. And as a result, Via Varejo has zero control. And without control, there is no right to a trademark. Trademark rights demand control. Now, there was testimony that their control is that they can exclude. Well, of course they can exclude certain things. Everyone, Google made sure that everyone has the ability to make sure that there's not pornography ads on their website if they're a type of business that doesn't want that, or to exclude a competitor, for instance. But an exclusion does not therefore create advertising rights whereby they exert control over such advertising rights. And then the third one was the marketplace sellers. The marketplace sellers may be what you're referring to, Your Honor.
No, I wasn't. Let me ask you about your substantial effects argument. You're arguing, if I understood it from your brief, and really more so in the reply, that in order to establish their ownership or prior use, they have to show substantial effects in the United States.
Yes.
But isn't the substantial effects language that you're citing, doesn't that come from the Steele versus Bulova case that is talking about the jurisdictional test, not the ownership test, and aren't they different?
No, I don't think they're different. Yes, it's a jurisdictional question, but that jurisdictional question is subsumed in the question of whether or not there are rights to begin with. So are there rights in the U.S. that they're claiming? And the only way to make that analysis, and walking down that path of do you have a trademark, do you have rights, is that trademark in use, and what is the substantial effect of that use? And the case law that is cited to even within this circuit looks to whether or not there was a jurisdictional question, and that's an argument made by Mr. Bowler's briefing, is, well, this is just purely jurisdictional. No, it's more than jurisdictional. It goes to the heart of, we have to determine whether you can exert the Lanham Act in the United States. Can a foreign entity get to claim rights under the Lanham Act and assert them? And the only way to do that is to determine if there was a substantial effect within the United States.
Direct Niche is a United States corporation, right?
Yes, sir.
Its conduct occurred in the United States. It's a Minnesota company, right?
Correct.
So I don't understand. You know, it seems to be pretty elementary. If it's the Steele versus Bulova watch is about exercising jurisdiction over infringement occurring in a foreign country. Here the infringement occurs in the United States by a Minnesota company. That's the jurisdictional hook, right?
No, the question is whether or not a foreign entity, via Verejo, can claim trademark rights in the U.S. against a U.S. entity. So in this situation, remember,
you're selling advertising from Brazil to U.S. companies, right?
We don't believe they were, but that's the claim, yes.
That's use in a foreign, this is use in foreign commerce.
If, in fact, there was a determination that the services being offered qualified as use for advertising services, then yes, certainly the U.S. government and the courts can regulate foreign commerce in that way under the Lanham Act. That's not the question, which then leads to the question by Judge Howard. Yes, that's why the substantial effects test matters here, in order to determine that merely the existence is not enough. So, for instance, in the 11th Circuit's Hard Rock case, payments to U.S. companies from the foreign entity still had no substantial effect. The 11th Circuit case makes that look at. And so it has to be the larger look. It has to be the deeper analysis.
The substantial effects test, was it presented to the district court?
The district court relied upon it in their final order. It was cited to by the district court, and I see I'm out of time, so I'll reserve the remainder.
Thank you.
Good morning, John Bowler.
Good morning.
Rappley. There are, I think, two issues on this appeal and that have been addressed by counsel in his argument, and they center around use in commerce, and there being both a jurisdictional use component, a jurisdictional use in that commerce which Congress can regulate, and then as Judge Wilson noted, there's also use in commerce and what is enough to establish ownership rights, and I'm going to address those in that order unless there's any other way that you'd like me to, Your Honor. But I don't think there's, with respect to the first issue on jurisdictional use in commerce, I don't think there's any serious debate, and the appellant hasn't answered why it doesn't believe our advertising services are classic commerce with a foreign nation that falls under Article 1. Section 45 of the Lanham Act sets out Section 15 U.S.C. 1127, defines what is constitutes jurisdictional use in commerce of a mark, and it essentially sets out, as McCarthy's and I think the court in International Bank Corp out of the Fourth Circuit noted, a two-part test. And the first inquiry is for jurisdictional use is that the mark must be used either in the sale or advertising of a service. And secondly, the service must be rendered in commerce. This court in Planetary Motion, which was cited by the Fourth Circuit in International Bank Corp, has noted that the breadth of the use in commerce under the Lanham Act is coextensive, which commerce that Congress can regulate under the Commerce Clause. And preferred directory advertising listings, the banner ads, and the marketplace seller program are clearly fall into the sale of the use of a mark and the sale of advertising of a service. And
the marketplace seller program didn't start until after they registered the mark, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court found that the distinctiveness of the mark Casas Bahia was established prior to the Direct Nietzsche's first registration. I think that the statute reads that the mark must be distinctive at the time of registration. The district court also found that we have an inherently distinctive mark that is fanciful or arbitrary, which is doesn't need to be shown to be distinctive. It is distinctive at the time of the registration. And there was a re-registration of the disputed domain name by Direct Nietzsche, not only after the WIPO decision in 2015 and after commencement of the litigation in late 2015, but during the litigation in 2016 when our marketplace seller program was used.
How is the preferred product placement really any different than when I go to Publix and they have Diet Coke right in front waiting for me as opposed to Diet Pepsi?
It's a good question. And Your Honor, I think it's the In Re Dr. Pepper case, which Direct Nietzsche relies on, actually discusses how department stores and retail stores are the classic type of situation that would involve an advertising service. Our business is operating an appliance store distributing the products of third parties under their brand names. With a preferred directory listing, Mr. Othon Vila testified, I think it was at docket 129, maybe around page 40, 41, he said there are three separate different negotiations with that product reseller. First, we negotiate the volume of product we want to purchase from a supplier and the price. Secondly, we look at whether we sell more product than we ordered. And if we did, that we negotiate a discount. Third, separate and above that, over and above that, is a separate transaction where we have a limited number of spaces on the website that we offer to preferred clients who want their product placed preferentially, kind of above and set apart from the ordinary product. And in return for that placement, we either get a payment from that retailer, that supplier, or we get a discount. So it is a separate service. It's a separate business. It's a the most profitable business, as Mr. Othon Vila testified. It's even more profitable than the sell the selling of the actual products. The second part of the jurisdictional test is, and I think this overlaps a bit with the use in commerce sufficient to establish ownership of a mark, is the services must be rendered, and that is in either interstate or foreign commerce. And I think we've, I know we've established very clearly that Apple is a foreign citizen. It's transacting business with United States citizens and foreign commerce with the United States, and that those ads and that those services are in fact rendered. And we had not only documentary or oral testimony from Othon Vila to the rendering, but we actually had, there were a number of screenshots for the preferred placement ads with various U.S. Companies. And we had also screenshots showing the rendering of the banner advertising services. And there was some, I think we cited to the In re Caruso case, and also, which was a TTAB decision, as well as a case, I believe it was Cipher Trust, out of the Fifth Circuit, that said that the use of a mark, how shall I say, that a rendering is an element of a sale, and therefore showing the mark, as we did on those website screen captures, appertaining to therewith the actual rendering of our service is a use of the mark, is an association with the mark. Now, the second way the use in commerce is used, and this touches back to where I think Judge Wilson cited Crystal and Planetary Motion, and that is that addresses just what does it take in this circuit to establish ownership rights of a mark. And the court starts out with the going back to just the textual language of Section 45, that's 15 U.S.C. 1127. And the service mark is just any word or symbol or name used by a person.
Well, you should have argued that in your brief. That's the 11th Circuit standard. If we prepare an opinion in this case, what should the opinion say with regard to the appropriate standard to establish use of the mark in commerce?
Your Honor,
should we say it's the Federal Circuit standard, or should we say it's the 11th Circuit standard?
Your Honor, we did advocate the 11th Circuit standard in the district court. The Federal Circuit, and so did Direct Nietzsche in our pretrial
But we're plainly bound by our case law, are we not?
You are.
And to the extent there may be any difference between how the Federal Circuit comes at the question of use in commerce and how we come at that question, we are bound by controlling precedent in this circuit. I take it you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
All right. So are we bound by Planetary and Crystal here?
You are.
All right. So why don't you apply them here?
Your Honor, when you look at the test set out in Crystal and Planetary Motion, this court looks there. It needs to be adoption, prior adoption, and step one. And step two, there's a distinctiveness. And this court applies a totality of the circumstances analysis of whether a party has established ownership. Sales is highly persuasive. we have sales of advertising services here, although sales is not necessary. This court in Planetary Motion said that to warrant protection, the use of a mark need not have been gained widespread public recognition.
I take it you would agree that use of the mark in association with Villa Verejo's retail business would not satisfy the use in commerce requirement. So you have to look elsewhere to find it, right?
Your Honor, if I could just ask you to rephrase, I missed the first part of your question.
You do not dispute that the use of the mark in association with Verejo's retail business would not satisfy the use in commerce requirement, would it?
Correct, Your Honor.
So okay, so you have to look elsewhere.
And we'd have to look elsewhere.
Okay, so let's look elsewhere here. You're left to argue that it obtained a common law service mark in connection with the advertising services which it claims to have provided to certain U.S. companies, right? That's what you have to look to.
Correct.
All right. Look to them and tell me how that meets your standard under Planetary, et cetera.
So we supplied both oral testimony and documentary evidence. Mr. Othon Vila testified that we use the mark in connection with their advertising services, and when pressed on whether customers of advertising services transact with Casas Bahia as Casas Bahia, his testimony was repeatedly yes. I asked him that with respect to Black & Decker. I asked him that with respect to Microsoft. That's on docket 139 at pages 114, line 25, to page 115, line 10. In addition to that, there was trial testimony with respect to preferred placements that U.S. suppliers negotiate directly with Casas Bahia. There was also testimony the same with respect to banner advertising, as Judge Howard noticed. And I think my client used a General Motors example for banner advertising. And that was also the case with the market place ads. Those ads were rendered on the Casas Bahia website, and in addition to his testimony, there was evidence that the services were actually rendered. That is, that the that is evidence that the service mark is being used in association with the sales of the services itself. We cited in our briefs, the In Re Caruso case, which the district court cited in its order for the proposition that evidence like ours showing use of a mark in the rendering of a service is evidence that the mark is used to identify the service.
Mr. Vila testified about General Motors, but he testified it sort of in about it sort of more hypothetically. He was saying, he was explaining how Casas Bahia might negotiate with a particular entity to put the ads directly, the banner ads directly on their website. So he says it could be that General Motors approaches us that way. Where in the record is there specific evidence of a particular entity contracting directly or negotiating directly with Casas Bahia for the placement of a banner ad?
Your Honor, I recall Mr. Avila's testimony that we deal directly with companies in addition to Google, that we deal directly with companies such as Adobe and Yahoo. I'm looking for the record site. That we deal with Yahoo, Adobe, and others, in addition to U.S. Companies. I see that I'm about running out of time on the one issue I've not addressed that was raised in the opening statements was about the court declining to strike the testimony. In addition to the record cites that the plaintiff relied on, Mr. Vila, as Judge Howard noticed, said he had independent knowledge outside that document. And when we came back to that a similar line of inquiry later in the case at docket 139 at page 116 to page 117, he testified without referencing to a document that there were 1 million United States visitors in 2014, 1.5 million visitors from the United States in 2015, and in 2016 there were more than 4 million visitors from the United States. I see that I'm out of time, and unless the court has questions.
Thanks very much. Mr. Spielman, you've reserved 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you again, Your Honors. Quickly, I think McCarthy is really instructive here.
And let me ask just a simple fact question. Is there not abundant evidence here showing that Casas Bahia mark is displayed prominently during the rendering of the advertising services?
No, I think there's almost none. And the reason is because it premises the concept that...
Well, on the top of every page of the Casa Bahia website, isn't the Casas Bahia mark displayed in close proximity to the various advertisements and promotional images that Via Varejo featured on its site?
So again, assuming that in fact, yes, the
answer would be yes to that question.
Yes, the Casas Bahia words are displayed at the top like every website would be. The difference is, and in this situation, that's why I think McCarthy really is instructive. The words from McCarthy are helpful. Those services that are commonly incidental to the production of or sale of goods do not constitute services sufficient to justify the registration of a mark. They're expected or routine from the Dr. Pepper case. It was expected or routine that they're going to sell their goods. This is not and has never been advertising. It is merely...
I take it you do not disagree that the question of whether a mark has been used to identify a particular type of service is a question of fact that we review only for clear error.
Yes, except in this situation, there was a failure to apply the correct standard, and therefore it was a de novo rule, error of law.
The error of law is what?
A failure to apply the substantial effects test.
Okay.
I'll close with one concept. The Lanham Act is a two-way street. In one breath, Via Varejo would like this court to say, we have common law rights, and therefore... we get to assert them in the U.S. However, the reverse would also need to be true. And in a similar situation where Via Varejo was seeking to enforce its rights against a U.S. entity, would have a difficult time getting hailed into court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you much. Thank you both for your efforts.